Hello, and welcome to Convergently Speaking. Today on the podcast, we'll be talking about the Enneagram. Hi, I'm Caitlin, and today on the podcast, it's just me, not Dan, and I have with me my sister Heidi. We're at our parents' house at the moment. We found a hopefully quiet corner of the house. We have a lot of people here. We were just looking at wedding dresses for Heidi, which was very exciting. She's recently become certified as an Enneagram coach and is helping people find their Enneagram types, and I just wanted to talk to her about that, how that's going, and what that's all looking like. So welcome, Heidi.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So on Convergently Speaking, we've referenced the Enneagram quite a lot, and probably a lot of our listeners have some familiarity with it, but I don't think we've ever systematically gone through, explained all the ins and outs of it. Why don't you give us your little elevator pitch about the Enneagram and kind of how it's caught your attention and why you like it?
Sure. So I always explain the Enneagram in comparison to Myers-Briggs usually, because a lot of people have familiarity with that. So it is similar to Myers-Briggs in a lot of ways, in that it is a personality typology, but it's different in that it focuses more on your core motivations versus your cognitive functions. So there's some overlap, but we have different concepts for kind of talking about different things. So the Enneagram has 9 different personality types that encapsulate kind of the various different parts of humanity, and it allows for a lot of nuance as well. There's lots of different layers to the Enneagram that allow for people not to be just put into a box, but allow for all of the different complexities that exist in each individual person. It got my attention. Well, I actually was introduced to it by you and Dan when I was 17. You were talking about it because I've always been interested in personality stuff. It really caught my attention because when I first looked into it, it was very clear which type I was. And it helped me a lot understanding I was a type 3 going into my end of high school and into my college years, and just starting to notice those unconscious patterns that were not serving me well, and then being able to have that awareness to start breaking those patterns at a fairly early age. I think a lot of people don't have that background when you're 19, 20, 21. So I feel like it allowed me to avoid a lot of the pitfalls of my personality, and so it made me really passionate about wanting to help other people to be able to do that too, and just having more self-awareness, understanding why you think, feel, and do the things that you do, and how you can find the ways forward that are healthier, and also understanding the ways that you can become unhealthy and go down a path that is destructive as well.
Yeah. I suppose we did introduce you to it, didn't we? So that's really cool, and cool that you were able to be self-aware enough to see what was happening for you and how you could use it to better yourself and to work into your future. Cool. So why don't you go through, I know we can't get super in depth, of course, in a short time, but as you said, there's 9 different types. Do you want to go through each of the 9 types and kind of just give the little spiel about each one to explain?
Yeah. So they are numbered 1 through 9, and there's a symbol of the Enneagram 2 that maybe people out there have seen. So we'll start with type 1. The type 1 is known as the perfectionist, or sometimes the reformer. Their core desire is to be good and right, to have integrity, and then their core fear is being wrong, bad, corrupt, or evil. And then there's the type 2, which is known as the helper. They desire to be valued and seen and loved, and their core fear is being rejected, being unwanted, not valued, and their support not appreciated. The type 3, which is my type, is the achiever. The type 3 desires to have status, achievements, to be admired. They fear being a failure or being seen as a failure, being inefficient, and not having high status. Type 4 is known as the kind of romantic individualist. They desire to be very unique and special and seen as such, and their core fear is having something fundamentally flawed within them, that there's something missing, and not being valued for their unique self. Type 5 is the investigative thinker, and so they desire to have knowledge, to be competent. They fear having obligations placed on them, having their internal resources depleted, or being seen as incompetent. Type 6 is the loyal guardian, and they desire support, security, and guidance, and they fear not having those things, being without all of them. The type 7 is oftentimes known as the entertainer, and they desire to be fully satisfied and desire to constantly be filled up with new experiences, and they fear being trapped in emotional pain and being bored and not having something fun. Type 8 is the challenger, and they desire to have control and intensity, and they fear being betrayed, and they desire to really protect their inner circle. And then finally, the type 9 is the peacemaker, and they desire internal and external peace and harmony, and they really fear tension and discord and being overlooked and having disconnection in relationships. So that's the 9 type.
That was a very, very good nutshell, very succinct. I haven't actually probably gone through them all like that for a while. So yeah, as you said, you're a 3. Mm-hmm. I'm the number 9, so the peacemaker. Mm-hmm. As you were saying in there, each one of the types has a core fear, mm-hmm. right? That is another thing where the Enneagram is different from other personality types, where it's not so much about outward behavior or, like you say, the cognitive functions, but it's about that core motivation, yep. right? Two different people could have the same outward behavior, mm-hmm. but it's really about the inner thing. So you've been certified to help people mm-hmm. figure out what that is. Go a little bit through the process of how you would guide somebody through that, getting to the core motivation.
Yeah. Well, I usually take them through just like an intro to the Enneagram. So they have this a basic understanding. I go through all of the core motivations of each type, so they already understand, at least at a basic level, how each type is distinct. And I give a little bit of a description so that they can start to clock, like, oh, this sounds like me, this sounds like me. And then I usually have them go away and I have them take an assessment, which I use really just to narrow it down, because assessments are not super accurate just because it really depends on how you know yourself. And yeah, they have a high degree of error. So I use that mainly just to see what is showing up as some of the top types, what seems to be really not aligning. And then I also have them rank what they identify with as well. So I have them look at all the core motivations and I say, before you do this test, what really resonates and what really doesn't, and rank them from 1 to 9. And that also helps. A lot of times they're very similar. And then after they've had the time to kind of process through that and they've already started thinking about it, then I go through a typing interview with them and we look at their results. And I basically just guide them with different questions through each of the types that were like their top 2 or 3. And then just ask them more questions about what really resonated about the core motivations of this one versus this one versus this one. I shed some more light on some deeper, more complex concepts within the Enneagram, and then start asking more questions about which things really start to feel like they align. It's a lot of why questions, digging in deeper of like, if they are talking about a lot of the behaviors that they do, it's, well, okay, what is motivating you to do that behavior? I like to use the example of, you could hear, oh, type 4s are really withdrawn, I'm a really withdrawn person, but also 5s can be really withdrawn, 9s can be really withdrawn. Other types, when they're unhealthy, can also be withdrawn. Like, there's just so many other factors.
And it's like, what is the fear? Yeah. What's keeping you from going outward? And that can be so many different things.
Like, are you trying
things.
To protect your emotions? Or are you trying to protect your energy levels and your internal resources? Because that's going to be a very different type. Like, that's one is a type 4, one is a type 5. It's going to be very different.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of just, like, kind of slowly guiding them through that and reflecting back, like, oh, I'm hearing this, so let's dig into this a little more. And then I always tell them that it's not necessarily that we're going to find their type in 1 hour. It really depends on each person. So that's the hope and the goal. But open it up to potentially meeting again or just being an open resource for them as they reflect on their own time and everything. But in my experience, we've at least been able to narrow it down to two or at least feel like 80% solid on on one, if not feeling really solid on which type they are.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my process in starting the whole journey.
Because it can be such a confronting thing.
Yeah.
Because you're really looking at those core things and looking at what your motivations are, and it's not always flattering.
I
mean, like, one of the things I know I've always heard is, like, the one that you don't want to be.
Yeah.
That's probably, it should be really embarrassing if once you realize what type you are, because it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So yeah, I suppose it also would depend on how ready the person is to sort of confront those.
Yeah, definitely.
Those truths about themselves.
And I always say that the Enneagram, you have to use it with a lot of care because it is so exposing.
Mm.
And so it's really important to use it responsibly and not use it in a way that is either belittling other people, like if you know what their type is, not being like, oh, well, you're always this way. And, you know, you're a 9. I can just take advantage of you. And, you know, because that can definitely happen with certain types that are less aggressive, and knowing that about somebody and then using it to get your own way is
totally
a way that you can use this tool, completely misusing this tool.
Yeah.
And you can also use it as a defensive mechanism to just excuse why you're doing things and make it everyone else's problem.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, well, I'm not going to change because this is just who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I love about the Enneagram, is that it doesn't just place you into one box, but it really shows the whole gambit of how you can show up in health and unhealth.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's aspirational in the sense that you can see, like, kind of the goal for what it really looks like when you're flourishing, when you're thriving, and to want to work towards that. And then you can also see these warning signs for when you're not healthy. And so then you can start to cultivate awareness and have these, like, kind of like alerts that go off. Oh, when I start doing that behavior or feeling this way, that's showing me something and I need to change my behavior, versus just kind of going in that unconscious default pattern that you're just kind of wired in.
Right. So what, maybe give me some free advice. Do a 9 for me, as far as what would those different levels of health be for a 9, and what would you sort of, what would indicate that somebody's a healthy 9 or a not so healthy 9?
Okay, so when a 9 is, I like to say, on autopilot, this, you know, when you're just average, it's going to be kind of like you're living in a fog. So like I said, 9s desire this peace and harmony over everything else, but they can often try to achieve that by disregarding themselves for the sake of accommodating and pleasing others instead. And so they can start to tune out reality and become unwilling to exert themselves or focus on problems. And then they can start to withdraw and disengage or become unresponsive in order to cope with uncomfortability or conflict. And so it can become a little difficult to self-reflect on what they're feeling, what they're thinking, how to ask for what they need, what their needs even are. And then they can start to struggle with procrastination, motivation, and inertia. And so when this is left unchecked and they move to more of that unhealthy space, they can start to self-forget completely and only be others focused, and start to numb out or dissociate so much that, you know, it can become this very physically lazy thing and even become hard to function if it's like at an extreme level, and start to trick themselves into thinking that everything is fine when it isn't, because you want to maintain this sense of inner peace and harmony. And so they can become more passive aggressive when they start to feel anxious. They will sometimes have a rare burst of anger when things have been pushed down for too long.
Mm.
But when nines are healthy. I haven't
been experiencing any of that in the last week.
Caitlin's like, you're reading me entirely. But when you're healthy, nines will really become awake to what their dreams and passions and desires and opinions are apart from other people and what they've maybe been told they should be. And they'll take the time to really know what they want, and they will start to speak up for themselves with confidence, and they will start to engage fully with life instead of dissociating or withdrawing, and they can be really great instigators for true peace and harmony because they can see all sides of an issue. They are really great at making other people feel valued and heard.
I love the concept that, well, I actually hate the concept and the fact that like the way to peace is going through the conflict, but that's a good one for me to remember and to realize that, yeah, if you can get to that healthier place, that actually creating real peace and real, not just like a pushing things down kind of steady feeling, that could be my, like my superpower when I'm able to be in that more healthy place, which is cool. But yeah, the conflict that you have to go through is scary.
Yeah.
We haven't really talked about the idea behind how people kind of get to be their number. What did your teacher say? Was it kind of half nurture, half nature-ish?
Yeah, I feel like there's kind of different schools of thought on it. My stance on it and where I would say my teacher landed as well was more that you were born with your number. I got certified with your Enneagram coach. They focus on it from a Christian perspective. Mm-hmm. So there's very much that idea of like, well, God made us this way, you know, and that kind of thing, which I personally would subscribe to in believing that we were created intentionally and that is a beautiful thing. And, you know, there's pitfalls to our personalities and everything, but that there is this ultimate goal and what flourishing looks like for your type that is a really beautiful thing in each of the nine types.
Yeah.
So that's where I would land, but there's definitely different schools of thought on it. I mean, nurture definitely has, I think, a big impact on some of the other ways that you show up as your type. And I think that whole thing can really kind of account for a lot of the nurture aspect of it and other ways that different types also show up for you. Because we all have all types within us.
Right.
It's just which one is your main type where you're really operating from and where do you also use these other types in your life as well?
Yeah, it is so interesting because I know I've thought about that where, you know, the same nurture situation of two different people, you know, they can get from it that situation and go in totally different directions and interpret it and react to it in such different ways.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was asking that because thinking about me being a nine and thinking about those more unhealthy things where I really connect with it and can kind of see, well, where it started and where I saw those patterns starting was being part of a big family. We didn't give that context, but there's five kids in our family. I'm the oldest, Heidi's the youngest.
Yeah.
Being the oldest in a really big family, however naturally I was started that way, my way of belonging and helping was by not making much of a fuss, not having too many outspoken opinions because to varying degrees it felt like, well, it doesn't matter because there's so many other people involved,
right?
And wanting to be, I suppose, helpful by not adding to the chaos and seeing, you know, the interplay with the different family members and their numbers and stuff too. So
yeah, I think our family could even be like a case study in just that and how we can live in fairly similar circumstances. I mean, our age gap definitely created different childhoods for sure, but still, you know, relatively similar parenting and how that created, you know, nines and threes are very different. And that is one of the concepts that I take people through is the interpreted childhood messages that we have.
Yeah.
And kind of we talk about how, yeah, like there can be two children who experience the same you know, circumstances and scenarios in their childhood and interpreted very different things from them, and how children are great observers but terrible interpreters.
Yes.
And, you know, so experiencing our mom as a one, so ones can be, they want everything to be good and right, and so there's a right way to do things, and sometimes that can come off as criticism when they want things done a certain way. And so for me as a three, wanting to achieve and to succeed and always be the best at whatever I do, if it felt like, oh, well, I'm interpreting that nothing I do is ever good enough, versus, you know, how would you have interpreted that kind of scenario?
Yeah, I probably got some of that. Ultimately, there were in some things I consciously, unconsciously, and then I realized I did it, like, stop trying.
Yeah.
And my inner thing was, if I feel like I'm going to be criticized, I know I didn't actually try my hardest.
Yeah.
So that was sort of my coping mechanism, which I suppose is a little bit different.
Yeah. So, like, that just kind of shows how a similar thing, even, like, getting kind of that specific with criticism of chores or whatever, it can, be interpreted in just different ways.
Yeah.
And lead us towards different behaviors.
And somebody else could, like, with the big family thing, say, like, an eight, their impulse would just, well, I just have to be louder.
Yeah.
I just have to,
I have to dominate everybody.
Yeah. And tell everybody what to do. That's how I'm going to, you know, get my voice heard, you know, and that's same situation, completely different reactions. You haven't quite gotten to the bottom. Our whole family, there do seem to be a lot of nines.
There do seem to be a lot of nines, and I'm marrying a nine.
I was going to ask too. So yeah, you're engaged. Mm-hmm. You're going to get married next year. How long have you guys been? 2 or 3 years together?
Four almost.
Four.
Yeah, you've been in Australia.
With your relationship with Ben, and then also, you know, just friends and family, as we've been talking. What ways have you used the Enneagram and that understanding in all of that?
I use it a lot, honestly. Mm. It's been so helpful in understanding how to interact with the people closest to me in a way that is more tailored to them. And understanding where I'm coming from and what my needs are, but also understanding where other people are coming from and what their needs are. And I think I use it a lot in how I tailor, even how I speak to different people now. Mm. So in my relationship with Ben, since he's a nine, like I said, you know, nines and threes are very different. Nines often struggle with motivation and ambition. Threes do not have a problem with that. We have the opposite problem. We have a hard time slowing down. We can feel guilty for resting and not achieving everything on our to-do list and everything. So in a lot of ways, we're opposites, but kind of in the ways that we really need, like, to balance each other out. Mm. And I think that's what I've really noticed in our relationship that's been really beautiful. And understanding the Enneagram has made me really appreciate that. And understanding, like, how I can understand where he's coming from and how nines take a longer time to process things, and they kind of need to get there on their own. Mm. They respond better to positive reinforcement versus, like, well, you should do this, because it's going to make them not want to do it.
Yeah.
So, and I've learned that after being with him for so long and understanding, like, how can I actually encourage him in ways that are really going to be, he's going to receive well. He's a personal trainer right now and, you know, is trying to build up that business and that clientele. And it's been a lot of me seeing something that he did well, or when he does get a new client, really praising those things. And when he is stepping outside of his comfort zone and realizing that that's a bigger deal than it would be for me to, you know, sell something that's, like, more within my wheelhouse and more within my comfort zone than it is for him. Mm. And so seeing when he does do those things that are really outside of his comfort zone, being like, that was really awesome. And I acknowledge that that was something that was a big thing for you that maybe wouldn't have been a big thing for someone else. And he does a really good job of reminding me when I'm, like, overexerting myself. He even told me, like, last week, because I was like, oh, I'm really stressed. I have all these things that I'm doing, because, of course, I'm always doing all the different things. And he was like, I feel like you go through cycles of this, like, every few months. And I was like, you're right. He was able to notice those things and really gently point them out, which is something that I need, because I'm pretty hard on myself, you know, always wanting to be the best and everything. And so he has a way of really just, like, gently coming at those things and being like, maybe you need to rest, you know? And so I help motivate him. He helps me slow down. And I think we help each other, like, kind of see our blind spots and then move forward more healthfully.
Yeah, that's so cool that you guys have been able to have that understanding of each other. Because, and we have talked about a lot on the podcast before about how those personality, like, strengths and weaknesses, mm-hmm. it can be so easy to see the weakness and, yeah. or maybe the weakness, but then you have to realize what, like, the flip side of the mm-hmm. coin is, that that's something really good,
yeah.
and realize that you kind of don't get one without the other. So that's really cool to hear that you guys have been able to figure that out even before getting married.
Yeah. No, it's been a really, really useful tool, and I'm mm-hmm. really happy to have had it at this point in my life and stuff, instead of, like, you know, having all these issues of, because I could totally see how our two personalities could clash in so many ways, and me being like, you're not doing anything, you're not motivated, and how that's, like, really frustrating for me. But it's really not something that frustrates me now, because I understand how his brain works. I'm like, oh, right. well, this is how he works, and mm-hmm. it's different from me. And mm-hmm. and it causes it to be a lot more, like, truly peaceful, yes. which is really great.
Oh, that's so good. And you can realize you're giving him the gift of motivation mm-hmm. and drive, I suppose. And Dan does that for me too, mm-hmm. as a one. You know, there's that similar thing. And then he can give you the gift of the rest and mm-hmm. go, oh, I'll just come sit on the couch with me.
Yeah. which is, like, yeah. really, it's really nice to have somebody, like, give you that permission to do that.
For sure. Awesome. Let's just round out this discussion. Since the Enneagram has sort of become more popular, I know a lot of churches yeah. know about it and stuff, parts of it can become a little pop psych mm-hmm. type of thing about it, where people just mm-hmm. know a little bit and think they know. So what are some sort of misconceptions that you come across that could be even, you know, damaging if people are only getting that surface level, since it is such mm-hmm. such a deep and powerful tool?
I think one of the big ones is realizing that it's actually about the core motivations. I think that wasn't even necessarily something I truly understood when I even first learned about it. Because a lot of personality typology initially is just, you know, this is a description of this type of person and you resonate with parts of it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And those are all, like, well and good to kind of jumpstart you. But since it's all about motivations, it can be really misleading, and it can lead to a lot of people mistyping themselves, especially because if they see certain things that are aspirational or they really yeah. only do in some parts of their lives, mm-hmm. but it's not really, like, all encompassing like they might think, it can just lead to a lot of confusion. And it's really helpful to just go down to the core motivations and really just dissect those things and analyze why you're doing what you're doing, instead of just relying on descriptions to get yeah. you there. And it's also just not going to lead to the same kind of self-reflection and self-discovery that's going to bring that kind of growth and transformation you're looking for. Another one is that it's going to put you in a box, especially because there's 9 types. I mean, even within Myers-Briggs, there's 16 personalities. So that feels like at least, like, there's more. But, you know, certain people can feel put off by being categorized, which I totally get. Yeah, I mean, everybody is unique. And I think understanding that the Enneagram actually is designed to allow for all of that nuance and complexity is a really important thing to understand, so that you don't just write it off as something like astrology or something, which I think can be a little more, like, you know, put you in a box and excuse your behavior.
Totally.
But rather, it is a tool for growth, and that's the point of it. There's just so many different concepts and layers within it, and the different ways that you're connected to different numbers. That's just, like, a really, really important thing to understand. So I would say those are the two big ones that I come across.
Awesome. Well, perfect way to wrap up. If people want to work with somebody to do some of that growth and understand some of those deeper layers of the Enneagram, you would be a prime person to help them. Tell us where to find you.
Yeah, so my company is called Formed to Flourish. On social media, on Instagram and TikTok, I'm at Formed to Flourish Coaching. So I have some free resources there if you want to just learn a little bit more. I have lots of videos on there about different concepts. And on my website, it's also formedtoflourish.com, and I do have a free intro to the Enneagram course that you can take if you want to learn more about all the different core motivations and a brief description of all the types and just how you can start using the Enneagram to grow.
Awesome. Cool. And I'll link all those in our show notes so people can find it easy too. Awesome. Well, thank you for making time in your wedding preparation schedule for us. This is really fun to sit down and talk to you as a coach,
yeah,
not just as my sister. Really, it's fun. Been really, really cool to see your interest. And you visited us in Australia 2 years, 3 years
three,
ago.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. Time is so weird. But yeah, we had a lot of good talks then, mm-hmm, about all this stuff. It was cool to be seeing you like really getting into it, yeah, and enjoying it. So
I really have you guys to thank, honestly. You've gotten me so interested in all of this stuff. Maybe I would have heard about the Enneagram, mm-hmm, in other ways, but you were the guys that introduced me to it. So
awesome. Cool. Well, it's really cool to be able to collaborate like, yeah, this now and probably into the future as well. Thanks everyone for joining us on Convergently Speaking. And until next time, stay curious.